Another head rolls in the sugar importation controversy. Press Secretary Trixie Cruz-Angeles and the acting head of the Metro Manila Development Authority test positive for COVID-19. Poverty incidence in the Philippines rose to 18.1% last year. The Philippines' senior population steadily rising. We'll tackle that with PopCom Executive Director Juan Antonio Perez III. And the country's two former Moro rebel groups join hands under the new Bangsamoro Transition Authority. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Thanks for joining us. For those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, glad you could join us today. Our top story at this hour, a board member of the Philippine Sugar Regulatory Administration resigns amid the mess triggered by the illegal signing of a sugar importation order. Lady Vicencio filed this report.
Attorney Roland Beltran confirmed the filing of his resignation as a member of the Sugar Board. In his resignation letter addressed to Executive Secretary Attorney Vic Rodriguez, Beltran cited health reasons for his resignation. Beltran is among agriculture officials being investigated for signing Sugar Order No. 4 that will give authority to the Sugar Regulatory Administration to import 300,000 metric tons of sugar. According to the document, Beltran is the miller's representative in the Sugar Board. In his resignation letter sent to Malacanang, he said he had left SRA last July 1, 2022, but was informed by the SRA management last July 29 that his position was still in holdover capacity. Beltran then returned to the SRA August 1 to avoid being accused of neglecting his responsibilities at the Sugar Board. Beltran has stated he sees the current investigation on the signing of Sugar Order No. 4 as an opportunity to clear his name under due process.
Agriculture Undersecretary Leocadio Sebastian, who signed the importation order on behalf of President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. without his consent, resigned from his post last week. Meanwhile, President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. says the country might import 100,000 metric tons of sugar come October when local supply falls. Marcos said that amount may already augment a sugar supply in the country for the whole year. That's smaller than the 300,000 metric tons previously proposed. Marcos admits government cannot do away with importation right now as it addresses productivity issues in the agriculture sector. Another senator has filed a resolution urging the Senate Blue Ribbon Committee to conduct a probe on government's purchase of allegedly overpriced and outdated laptops for public school teachers. Senator Alan Peter Cayetano wants to know what caused the delay in the procurement of laptops. He said having the Bayanihan II law at that time should have made the process faster. Senators from the minority bloc, Coco Pimentel and Risa Ontiveros, earlier filed a resolution seeking an investigation into the matter. It was the Commission on Audit which first flagged the 2.4 billion peso purchase of the outdated laptops. They were supposed to be used by teachers for the implementation of distance learning at the height of the pandemic. A House lawmaker has filed a bill mandating the presence of Commission on Human Rights representatives in all drug-related police operations. Bagong Henerasyon Party List Representative Bernadette Herrera D. believes this would prevent human rights violations which hounded the drug war of the Duterte administration. But CHR Executive Director Jacqueline Deguia says while they agree on the need to make all police operations rights-based, Herrera D.'s proposal simply isn't feasible.
If we were to compare the sheer number of police operations vis-a-vis the number of investigators we have, it just pales into comparison. What we envision is a highly professionalized police force that is very competent in drug operations, but very much well-versed also in the laws as well as very compliant with the rule of law. And therefore, even with or without the presence of the CHR, they would make sure that all the rights of the accused, all the parameters laid out by the law are followed.
Vice President and Education Secretary Sara Duterte thanks partner agencies for their efforts in ensuring a safe school opening later this month. Our correspondent Ara Perez now joins us with more. Ara?
Carmina, that Ed and other government agencies are gathered here at the DepEd Central Office in Pasig to discuss their move to ensure a safe and successful class reopening, which will be on August 26. Dr. Alfonso Miguel Regala from DOH's Health Promotion Bureau says they are facilitating vaccination and routine immunization through a setting-based strategy in schools, communities, workplaces, places of worship, among others. Vaccination will no longer be required for teachers who will attend in-person classes along with students. So DOH is encouraging everyone to get their COVID jabs and to follow minimum health standards. For its part, LTFRB assures efficient supply of PUVs and route responsiveness through the reopening of pre-pandemic routes for the expected influx of students, strict implementation of road traffic laws, free rides, and 20% fare discount for students. Public Assistance Command Centers will also be set up here at the DepEd Central Office and the agency's regional offices that will be operational from August 15 to 26. The public may also send their concerns through social media or email. DepEd Chief and VP Sara Duterte also dropped by today's command conference to thank concerned agencies for their efforts. On another issue, Dinsing says VP Sara Duterte on Friday ordered an investigation on the purchase of alleged pricey and outdated laptops. DepEd has also set a fraud audit request to COA on the issue. Carmina.
Thanks a lot. Arapet is there joining us on the line. Take care, Ara, and you keep safe. Back here in the newsroom, Malacanang touts the composition of the new Bangsamoro Transition Authority for including representatives of the Moro National Liberation Front, aside from the Moro Islamic Liberation Front. Among the new members, the children of MNLF Chairman and Founder Nur Miswati, Abdul Karim, and Nurhida Miswati. Press Secretary Trixie Cruz Angeles says this is an indication that the two former Moro rebel groups are heeding the call for unity of President Marcos. Presidential Peace Advisor Secretary Carlito Galvez Jr. also lauded the inclusion of the MNLF in the BTA. The BTA is an interim government in the Bangsamoro Autonomous Region of Muslim Mindanao under the Bangsamoro Organic Law. For more on this development, we're now joined by former presidential advisor on the peace process, Teresita Ging Deles. Ging, nice to see you again. Welcome to the program and thanks for joining us today.
Good noon, Carmina. It's been a while.
All right. So how would you describe, obviously Malacanang touting this, former foes now together under the banner of unity, but how would you describe the composition of the Bangsamoro Transition Authority, the new BTA, as they're calling it?
That was always the intention, no? that all the groups, all the forces, and particularly, I guess, the forces that had fought government precisely under the cause of self-determination, that they all come together and be part of this government, accept that the highest form of autonomy that was granted through the peace agreement, the comprehensive agreement on the Bangsamoro, would be able to bring in everyone. And as of the earlier BTA, one faction of the MNLF was in fact already included, not the SEMMA wing. So for me, it's a good sign. It means that Miswari has accepted that this is the end point of the struggle. The struggle will now continue non-violently, but through their own self-governance among themselves to ensure that the best progress, the best peace is arrived for their people.
Now, as you said, this is an endpoint to the struggle. With that struggle comes a lot of history between and among all these factions. What should they avoid, Ging, to make sure that the mistakes of the past won't be committed again?
Well, it was always important, and I think the MILF was always bringing that up, no? Even during the negotiations and when we signed the peace agreement, that this agreement was not just for their group. I think that's important. But everyone in the leadership now of the Bangsamoro looks at what is for the common good of the entire Bangsamoro people, not what's good for the MILF, not what's good for the MNLF. MILF and MNLF were both forces that had fought violently. And the peace agreement, in fact, says that was a peaceful settlement of that. So as a matter of fact, strictly speaking, those nomenclatures should no longer be used, because MNLF and MILF both have armed groups. We use them still, of course. It is still in the transition phase, but that is the vision that at the end of it, it is not MNLF, it is not MILF. In fact, the goal and what is now in process, at least as far as the MILF I know is concerned, is the building of a party, so that at the end of the transition period, which according to the latest law, should end in 2025, is that they will compete. They will compete in elections through their parties, no longer as MNLF and MILF. Mm-hmm. I think that's important now for all the leaders of the Bangsamoro that had fought valiantly, that this was always about their people, the negotiations, achieve what is recognized still even in the world as a good agreement, not perfect, of course. Mm-hmm. But it did bring us as far as the negotiators at this time, the highest form of autonomy that is granted by our constitution. It is now time that the struggle will continue on this platform.
And talking about time, the president himself said, 3 years, that's not a lot of time to come up with important pieces of legislation to sort of pave the way for the next step from this interim government. What to you are the most important pieces of legislation that they should come up with at this point?
I know the ones that have not been finished that should be before the transition commission, before the transition period ends, is the election code, the local government code, the administrative code. I think the administrative code was finished. I'm not so sure now of this, but these are the important pillars of governance that will rule how governance will be. The chief minister has said that most important a priority agenda under this administration is education, and the election code I know is also one of the goals that they have put in that should also be put into place.
What do you think about what the president said regarding fiscal policy, that they should be able to tackle that as well? Go ahead.
Well, the both the comprehensive agreement and the Bangsamoro organic law do carry very important fiscal reforms. The principle of automatic allocation and regular allocation and automatic allocation is a very important reform in the autonomy. It means now that the Bangsamoro need not go through the Congress negotiating, transacting for their budget. There is now a formula based on what was the last budget that they had received, and an increase every year that should all happen automatically, mm-hmm. and regularly should be disbursed, so that the Bangsamoro, now knowing what their funds are going to be for the next year, can already plan their budget. They are now obliged to draft and pass their own general appropriations, regional appropriations code. Also very important are the are the agreements on revenue sharing, on how much of taxes will go to them, and how much of revenues from natural resources that are developed in the area should go to the Bangsamoro, which is very important now that armed conflict is supposed to have been resolved in the area. We know that there are a lot of resources in the Bangsamoro that had never been developed before, precisely because there was always all of this fighting. Now that that will happen, then Bangsamoro can earn their own revenue. As a matter of fact, I think even up to the end of the arm and up to last year, there was investments. There were investments. They were receiving high level of investments in the Bangsamoro. We've always said development is the other side of peace. Now that the transition period, and it should really be the final extension. Mm-hmm. It ends in 2025. Those laws, there is no excuse for that not to happen. Mm-hmm. Steps have been advanced for greater inclusion. I do hope that all of those who were appointed to the BPA take this on as a responsibility. It was the Bangsamoro was earned by their predecessors, and that it should not be seen as an inheritance for their own selves, but it is a legacy of certainly self-determination, and self-determination needs a lot of responsibility.
What about the pandemic, Ging? Because we do know that outside the BARM, vulnerabilities were exposed because of the pandemic. And while they're in this period already of possibly crafting laws to make room for the next step, what do you think must they focus on? Any vulnerabilities in the region that was really exposed that they can address at this point?
Well, even before, they had always said the basics, no? Health and education, that was basic. To have the basic infrastructure for health in every area, and education, a school in every barangay. Of course, power, no? And access is also very important. Make sure that every barangay has access to markets and has access to resources. Quite a bit of infrastructure has already happened, and that should continue. But rightly so, education and health had always been. During the negotiations, the MILF leadership had always said this was the most important, this was basic for their people. And in human development indices, they had fallen behind. In that, it is important, the human resource, that's the most important thing to take care of.
And finally, Ging, as a former advisor on the peace process, I personally know the hard work that you've put into making this a reality. With what you're seeing right now, does it feel good? Does it feel that this is happening? This is finally happening, and that after this last extension, we'll see really the realization of, for some, a lifelong struggle for the people.
It is heartening. You know, worldwide, they have said that most of the agreements break up after 7 years. And the comprehensive agreement of the Bangsamoro has crossed the line. It is now into 8 years. 8 years of relative peace, not complete peace, but If you will remember the big wars that used to happen there every 3 years, we haven't had that for a very long time, even before the signing of the peace agreement, where finally farms can be built, children's school will not be interrupted. It is so important, but it needs a real focus. I will say that in the last administration, it lacked a bit of focus. Somebody should really have their be watching all the time. There's still a lot of hand holding that needs to happen. The intergovernmental bodies, which means that national government and the regional government really work together. That's still very important to put into place. But yes, it is a that people in the Bangsamoro are able to sleep more quietly every night is certainly a comfort and an assurance for us. The Marawi issue, of course, still should not be forgotten. That is a big issue that needs some form of transitional justice compensation and rebuilding that needs to be very seriously looked at, and building in accordance to what the people, with the participation of people. Mm. But yes, it is a good time. It is a good time for peace, and we hope that everyone, the national government, doesn't forget it still has responsibilities here. But the regional government, it really now more than ever needs to show that it is in charge of the leadership, and it is an inclusive leadership, and thinking always of what is good for those who have suffered most in the long years of war.
Former presidential advisor on the peace process, Teresita Gingdeles, nice to see you again, and thank you for joining us today. Take care and you keep safe.
Thank you, Carmina.
And from there, we're going to take a quick break. Up ahead, the number of poor Filipinos rises to nearly 20 million in 2021. We'll give you details of that story and more when Dateline Philippines returns. Stay with ANC. And we're back. You're still with Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. Another head rolls in the sugar importation controversy. Press Secretary Trixie Cruz Angeles and the acting head of the Metro Manila Development Authority test positive for COVID-19. And poverty incidence in the Philippines rose to 18.1% last year. More Philippine government officials test positive for COVID. Press Secretary Trixie Cruz Angeles confirmed she contracted the virus. She is currently asymptomatic. Cruz Angeles says she will continue to work while isolating at home. Another official, Metropolitan Manila Development Authority Acting Chairman Carlo de Mayuga III, also tested positive. He has mild symptoms and will be in isolation for a week. The Philippines' COVID-19 death toll surpasses 61,000. That's after the health department logged 44 additional fatalities Sunday. It also reported more than 4,000 new infections, raising the number of active cases to 40,000. The country's COVID positivity rate, meanwhile, slowed to 18.1% this past week. The DOH officer in charge, Maria Rosario Vergere, says booster coverage in the Philippines needs to improve before the United States' model of loosening COVID restrictions can be adopted. Philippine health officials studying the benefits of next-generation COVID vaccines. Dr. Nina Gloriani of the Vaccine Expert Panel says firms like Pfizer and Moderna are producing a new batch of jabs that are made to specifically target the Omicron variant. The vaccines are expected to be released in the U.S. this October. But Gloriani says it may take a few more months before those jabs reach the Philippines, as another emergency use authorization will be required.
Ang umiikot na variant or sub-variant sa atin or maybe even sa most of the countries around the world, no, ay ang BA.4 and .5. So nag-umpisa tayo ng .1, .2, tapos nagkaroon siya ng maraming anak o kapatid, no? So bawat pagbabago ng anyo nitong Omicron na to ay nababawasan yung immunity sa kanya na na-generate doon sa previous vaccine. So kung ibibigay natin itong bagong variant kasama yung dati, no, in a bivalent form, as may mas makakatulong ito na mag-generate ng immunity against the specific variant.
The remains of drug war victim Kian De Los Santos exhumed this morning to undergo a re-autopsy. ABS-CBN's Mike Navalio now joins us with an update. Mike?
Permita, the remains of 17-year-old Kian De Los Santos was most recognized for the sentence at the drug war breakfast ceremony at the Loma Senate this morning.
Okay, we're going to have to go back to Mike in a bit. We're just going to have to reestablish our connection with him. In the meantime, we move on with the rest of the news this noon. The Philippines and China officially restart talks on transportation projects. Transport Secretary Jaime Bautista and Chinese Ambassador Huang Xilian discussed the resumption of talks for major China-funded railway projects like the PNR's South Long Haul Project, the Subic-Clark Railway, and the Mindanao Railway. The two also talked about maritime cooperation projects, as well as possible collaboration on maritime traffic safety.
They will see to it that the contractors that will work will provide or will give us very competitive rates so that the overall cost of constructing the projects will be cheaper. Even the interest rate may be a little bit higher. Because he said the interest rate is a very small portion of the total project. We're not limiting our options to China. No? We can also consider working with Japan and JICA.
Meanwhile, the Public Works Department said South Korea is interested in funding more infrastructure projects of the Philippine government. So far, there are three ongoing projects under South Korea's Economic Development Cooperation Fund in northern Samar, northern Mindanao, and central Luzon. The dry run of the expanded number coding scheme in Metro Manila kicked off today. As of noontime, traffic enforcers caught over 1,500 violators. They will only be given a warning with a full implementation set for Thursday. The expanded coding scheme will be implemented from 7 to 10 in the morning and then again from 5 p.m. to 8 in the evening.
From Monday to Wednesday, August 15 to 17, mamamara lang muna ho kami. It's about information dissemination, public awareness, and it's more on advocacy to remind the motorists na we're re-implementing it again.
This is for the community public. Para tinatay, work lang natin yung labas natin para sa ganun, mabigyan natin ng pagkakataon na makausag, makapasok sa tamang oras yung mga nagtukumit natin mga kababayan.
A look now at this week's oil price movements. Diesel prices will see the biggest rollback of 1 peso and 5 centavos per liter, while a liter of kerosene will be 45 centavos cheaper. Gasoline prices will also be slashed by 10 centavos per liter. This will be the sixth straight rollback for oil prices as the global economy reels from recession fears due to high inflation. And we have our correspondent back on the line. Mike Navalio now joins us to tell us more about the exhumation of the remains of drug war victim Kian De Los Santos. Mike, over to you. Mike?
Carmina, the remains of... Hello?
Go ahead.
Hello, Carmina. Carmina, the remains of 17-year-old Kian Lloyd De Los Santos, among the most recognizable victims of the Duterte's drug war, were exhumed in a quiet ceremony at the Iloloma Cemetery this morning. This comes the day before the fifth anniversary of his death tomorrow, and it's a five-year lease for his apartment to expire. Kian was killed on August 16, 2017 in Caloocan by cops. He was accused of being a drug runner who supposedly resisted arrest and fought back against the cops in what is locally known as Nanlaban. But surveillance footage, eyewitness accounts, and autopsy results revealed he was killed by the police. An eyewitness said he was pleading for his life because he needed to take an exam the next day. Three cops were convicted of murder in 2018 over Kian's death. They were sentenced to up to 40 years in prison, but their case is on appeal. Father Flavio Villanueva, founder of Program Paghilom, led the exhumation. Also present were some of his relatives, including his sister. After a brief prayer, Kian's remains were removed from the tomb, placed on a body bag, and loaded onto a van, which will take the remains to forensic pathologist Dr. Raquel Fortun, who will conduct another autopsy. Prior autopsy showed Kian died of three gunshot wounds and was shot while kneeling down, negating the narrative of the Caloocan police. Father Flavi says that by exhuming Kian's remains, they hope to uncover a deeper truth about what happened. Father Flavi and Dr. Fortun have previously led efforts to re-autopsy the remains of drug war victims whose death certificates indicated they died of natural causes, but whose skulls actually bore gunshot wounds. In Kian's case, they hope to see more findings that were not previously uncovered or revealed. Human rights groups consider Kian's death proof that extrajudicial killings in the Philippines exist, but the Philippine government has been heralding the 2018 conviction of three cops as proof that the domestic justice system is working. They raised Kian's case before the International Criminal Court in asking for a deferment of the ICC prosecutor's probe on the drug war killings in the country. So far, the Philippine Justice Department's drug war review has yielded a matrix of 52 cases, while the results of around 300 cases they looked into have not been revealed to the public. But human rights groups say that these figures are too little compared to the thousands killed in the drug war. Official figures show more than 6,000 drug suspects have been killed in police operations. Rights groups estimate a far bigger figure, including those killed by unidentified perpetrators or killed vigilante style. Kian's case, they point out, is the only conviction for drug war deaths so far. Kian's uncle Randy echoes these sentiments, asking why nobody else has been convicted over the deaths of other drug war victims. Let's listen in to what Father Flavi and Randy had to say.
We hope to uncover a deeper truth. We hope to uncover what took place, and as we have revealed in the past, paintulutan nating magsalita yung mga kalansay na nahimik ng ilang taon. Alam natin na na-autopsy, pero I think yung autopsy ay ginawa lang sa bahay. Ngayon ay mas masusi natin titignan kung ano at paano sa larangan ng siyensa makikita ang pagpaslang sa kanya.
Bakit si Kian lang? Sana na taon na. Kung nagtatrabaho at talagang hinahanap ang usuli siya, sana nadagdagan na. Pero siya yung naging mukha, no? Alam naman natin lahat na siya yung naging mukha at siya yung sumampal sa mukha natin lahat. At nagpatanggap na sobrang na yung patayan eh. Libo-libo na yun ang mga napapatay eh. Siguro sa pamamagitan ng kanyang kwento, tinanggap ng lahat na mayroong extrajudicial killing, na may pang-aabuso ang kapangyarihan mula sa mga alagad ng batas.
Kian's remains are the 61st to be exhumed under Program Paghilom's Project Arise. The CHOPS families of drug war victims recover remains of their loved ones after their lease contracts have lapsed. Other remains were cremated after autopsy, but Kian's family has yet to decide what to do with his remains. Carmina.
Thanks a lot, Mike Navallo. They're joining us on the line back here in the newsroom. The number of poor Filipinos hit nearly 20 million in 2021 as the Philippines' poverty incidence rose to 18.1%. Our very own Warren de Guzman now joins us with more details. Warren, over to you.
Good afternoon, Carmina. The Philippine Statistics Authority reports there were 19.99 million Filipinos living below the poverty threshold in 2021, up 2.3 million from the last poverty report released in 2018. In terms of poverty incidence, the rate for 2021 was 18.1% from 16.7% in 2018. Socioeconomic Planning Secretary Arsenio Balisacan says this means the Duterte administration fell short of its poverty alleviation goal for the end of its term. He said the country's poverty incidence fell short of its 2021 target of 15.5 to 17.5%, as indicated in the updated Philippine Development Plan for 2017 to 2022. Balisakan discussed what led to the high poverty rate. He said the effects of the COVID-19 pandemic, including income and employment losses, caused the poverty incidence to rise. Restrictions on mobility and low earning capacity of poor households due to limited access to regular and productive jobs made the lives of Filipinos difficult, he said. Data presented by the PSA showed areas in Mindanao and Visayas had higher poverty rates compared to Luzon. The poverty rate is computed using a poverty threshold, which was at 12,030 pesos a month for 2021, up from 2018, which had a threshold of 10,756 and 9,478 pesos in 2015. This is computed by the PSA, taking into consideration the bare minimum basic food and other needs of a family of five, as well as the prices of these needs based on availability of items. National statistician Undersecretary Dennis Mapa says given the elevated level of inflation this year, he expects the threshold has gone up. Mapa also noted that the PSA board has already decided that official poverty statistics will be reported every 2 years now. So they will be recomputing the poverty threshold by next year, and he does expect that threshold to increase. However, Secretary Balisakan says even with a higher threshold, he does not expect poverty to have risen this 2022. He said, given the greater opening up of the economy in 2022, the reduction in unemployment numbers and underemployment numbers in 2022, it is likely the poverty incidence will be lower despite the uptick in inflation. Even more so as we try to reduce the burden of the high prices of the poor by targeting our cash transfer programs to the most deserving members of our population, end quote. Balisakan says at a steady population growth of 1.6% per year alongside a return to 2 to 4% inflation by 2023, their goal of reducing the poverty incidence rate by 5 percentage points by the midterm of the Marcos administration and by another 4 percentage points by the end of the Marcos administration in 2028 is very feasible. He said, and I quote, in our assumptions when we were doing the exercise, we were actually working on 20% poverty for 2021 based on the numbers we were seeing in the first semester of 2021. This gives us the confidence that the numbers we are projecting for this administration are very much doable, end quote. Balisakan says the strategy to fight poverty will be three-pronged. First, they will continue to strive for a full reopening of the economy, including the return to 100% face-to-face classes. Second, they will target more investment in human capital, social development, and social protection to address scarring effects the pandemic had on training and education and productivity. And third, they will transform the production sectors by bringing in more investment for agriculture, manufacturing, and services to generate more quality jobs. As mentioned by National statistician Undersecretary Mapa, the next poverty report will be released in 2023. Carmina, back to you.
Thanks a lot, Warren de Guzman there, joining us today. Take care, Warren. Keep safe. And back here in the newsroom, the Philippines joining the global trend of an aging population. That's according to the Commission on Population and Development, or PopCom, which said the percentage of Filipino elderly has risen in the last two decades from 5.9% in 2000 to 8.5% in 2020. Joining us now to tackle this is PopCom Executive Director Juan Antonio Perez as the third. Undersecretary, good afternoon to you, and thanks for joining us today. Welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Carmina. And masayang pamilya sa inyong lahat.
Masayang pamilya din po sa inyo. All right. So this only means that the Philippine population is or has been seeing lower levels of fertility in recent years. We're seeing a decline in numbers of children aged under five. What will this all mean to the country's development, Undersecretary?
Yes, you know, globally, countries go through a process called the demographic transition. And the Philippines is in the middle of that right now. During a demographic transition, countries see lower fertility accompanied by lower mortality, which allows the population to be more productive, the ones in the working age group. Mm-hmm. Now, following that, there will be a period wherein the country begins to age. No? And what is happening in the Philippines is that we are lowering our fertility, but we are also, and mortality is somewhat, hopefully this year is down, but last year it was high.
Correct.
But at the same time, in 15 years, we think the Philippines will start aging. Mm. So countries went through this process over a period of 40, 50 years, no, this transition. The Philippines, however, will have a shortened period of transition such that our lower fertility will turn into, you know, an aging population by 2035.
And as this transition happens, you can't just accept that and see it in a vacuum, Undersecretary, because when you recognize these numbers, there has to be ample adjustment to sort of, you know, control the narrative that we're seeing. What adjustments might these take the form of?
Yes, you know, when a country enters demographic transition, it's really an opportunity.
Correct.
Where younger people will be able to where a younger population will and productive population will be able to contribute greatly to the economy. The government, because of the lower fertility, will be able to put more investments into education, into jobs, so that the economy booms for a period of 20 to 40 years. And that is the demographic dividend that countries that went through this period experience. However, in the Philippines, we came in late in reducing fertility. So rather than a 20 to 40-year period, our period of dividend of a good economy might be shortened to around 15 years or 20 years because the country will start aging by 2035. I think that's the significance of these two phenomena happening almost at the same time.
But what's significant?
We will have a shortened period.
Yeah, sorry to cut you there, Undersecretary, but what's significant as well will be the quality of the workforce that we'll be producing. You've heard the studies. You've heard what experts have warned us about how this pandemic is really going to affect the productivity of the workforce in the future. What are your thoughts on that? And what do you think must be adjusted at this point so that we're pretty sure that the workforce that we'll be producing is of quality and won't be a detriment to the development of the country?
Yes, the scarring phenomenon in the education system because of COVID will affect or has affected the below 15 age group. You know, they are the ones who are in the middle of who had to leave school, and the catching up phenomenon there has to do with you know, making them more employable. So I think one of the focuses of the next socioeconomic plan is to look at the employability of the younger population. So that would be probably improving the work in the Department of Education, but also TESDA, for example, has to come in with programs that will make our young people more able to join the economy. The economy, on the other hand, also has to create the jobs for young people, because the highest unemployment rates are happening among young people, yet they are also mismatched sometimes with the jobs that are available. So DepEd, TESDA, and to some extent CHED have to come up with measures to make our population, young population, more employable. At the same time, another segment of the population that needs to be supported are women.
Undersecretary, we're going to talk about talk about that in a while. But I just wanted to just one last question on having that the workforce be trained enough and be skilled enough if they were to enter the workforce early. We're talking about a little over 10 years here till 2035, when it's projected that a huge amount or a huge number of young people will be entering the workforce. Is that a short time for you? Is that a long enough time for you to be able to, you know, arm them with what they need to enter the workforce? Go ahead.
Yes, actually, we're looking to agencies like TESDA which have, you know, these short courses that can support greater employability. One area that needs support from TESDA's work is in the agriculture sector. Mm. It has been found that the courses that they have in agriculture are really not taken up by young people. And more of the trainings that they have available are really for industry and urban population. So we hope there'll be more balance in the menu of activities that TESDA can support. We're also looking to decentralize economic opportunities, not just in Metro Manila. You know, 63% of the economy is in Central Luzon, NCR, and Calabarzon. And the greatest unemployment is happening in south of Calabarzon, no? In the Visayas and Mindanao. So we need to pick up the efforts there in order to increase the employability of the people in Visayas and Mindanao so they don't transfer to Manila or to Calabarzon looking for jobs. So we have to push regional development even more so in the Visayas and Mindanao.
All right, so let's go to women and their potential.
Yes.
Their potential and productivity, but it could also go the other way, right? If not enough is done to harness that productivity, if not enough policies or programs are in place, talk to us about that. What are your findings and what can be done to sort of maximize the potential of women and their productivity? Because the age that we're looking at here, you know, they're the most productive in terms of reproduction and also in terms of their potential contribution to the workforce, Undersecretary.
Yeah, one thing we're trying to establish is, you know, to support women so that they can join the workforce. And one way to do that is planning their families, you know, to happen for their reproductive period to happen in a period, in a shorter period, in a focused period, so that they can return to the workforce more quickly, no? Mm-hmm. And right now the highest fertility is at 25 to 29,
right,
and 20 to 24. So those ages are where women sometimes have to leave the workforce for that. So we hope to that they can organize, plan their families more so that they can rejoin or become part of the workforce. Mm-hmm. They also need support in terms of daycare, in terms of support for the education of their children, particularly when that which is why they want face-to-face opening up the schools.
Yeah.
Because doing modules at home can also be very taxing. We've seen our own previous secretary of NEDA, who was doing secretary work as NEDA but also taking care of his child who was schooling at home.
Mm-mm,
so there need to be more opportunities to help women to join the labor force. Also, the new economies that are happening, the new job opportunities, virtual work from home will be a good opportunity for women to rejoin the workforce or become part of the workforce in the future.
All right. And you're in touch with NEDA regarding all your findings.
Yes, we hope to, we will come up with a development plan, population development plan, that will be incorporated in the Philippine Development Plan that NEDA is preparing over the next 6 months. Mm-hmm. So that by January of 2023, we hope to work more closely with the regional development councils, so, because that's where the work needs to be done to push these policies for young people, for women, for social protection, for adolescent mothers. Mm-hmm. All of these have to be in place at the regional level. And local governments have to be ready to support this because at the very end of the development process, local governments are, you know, the ones at the community level getting this done.
All right, we're going to have to leave it at that. Undersecretary Juan Antonio Perez III, Executive Director of the POPCOM, thank you for joining us this noon. Really appreciate it. Take care and you keep safe. Moving on, another U.S. congressional delegation arrives in Taiwan. The five-member delegation, led by Democratic Senator Ed Markey, will meet with Taiwanese President Tsai Ing-wen and attend a banquet hosted by Foreign Minister Joseph Wu. The American Institute in Taiwan says the two sides will be discussing issues of mutual interest, including global supply chains and regional security. Sunday's unannounced trip came after U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi visited the island nation earlier this month, sparking unprecedented air and sea drills by China that raised the prospect of conflict. Taiwan accused China of using Pelosi's visit as an excuse to kickstart military exercises to rehearse for an invasion. China views Taiwan as its own territory. In business, Ayala Corporation's Fernando Zobel de Ayala on medical leave. He has also taken a leave of absence as vice chairman of the board, president, and CEO. For more on this story, head on over to news.abs-cbn.com. And that'll do it for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, you can play back this newscast on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on ANC.